Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. Methamphetamine is in the news, with everyone from Montana's Attorney General on down talking about the drug's spread. New law enforcement and treatment approaches are being tried, but in the meantime, Montana's prison population continues to increase, driven largely by methamphetamine addiction. Often lost in the discussion are the people who pay the most for this highly addictive drug, the meth users themselves. Today we'll be talking with Katie and Kim, inmates in the Montana Women's Prison in Billings. Katie and Kim, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Hi.
Kim, let's start with you. Tell us where you grew up.
I grew up in Washington in a little town called Selah.
What'd your folks do?
My mom was a correctional officer throughout my school years. My dad worked for the state of Montana.
Had a stable family growing up?
Absolutely. Parents were wonderful. Did everything they could for their kids.
What did you want to do as you were growing up, thinking about, say, when you got to high school or whatever,
right,
what you want to do with your life?
I planned after high school going to college. I did go to college for 2 years. I wanted to finish college and become a teacher. Instead, I dropped out of college and I opened a daycare business and had a daycare business for 6 years.
Katie, let me ask you, where did you grow up and what's your family background?
I grew up in Darby, Montana, on the south side of the, or southwest side of the state. And my father worked at the sawmill for years and years, and my mother was kind of a busy homemaker. I grew up having horses, kind of a little cowgirl.
Sounds like a classic rural Montana life then.
It sure was.
Your folks still there?
My father is.
Now, neither of those stories fit my stereotype of I'm going to say, drug users. You grew up in a small rural Montana town, Katie. What led you to decide to use drugs, and was meth the first drug you used?
Actually, I had left home at a pretty young age and became a teenage mother. The first drug that I was introduced to was marijuana. In junior high school, I started smoking marijuana and drinking. And at the age of 18 is the first time I tried methamphetamine, and it was introduced to me at a party. Do you want to do a line?
A line, what does that mean?
It is a small amount of methamphetamine that is laid out on the table and you snort it up your nose.
Like cocaine. I mean, I've seen in films cocaine that sounds like the same deal.
Exactly like that.
And you were 18?
I was 18.
Why did you, at 18, snort the line of meth?
It seemed like it would be fun. Everyone around me was partying and laughing and playing card games and playing pool and having a good time, and I wanted to fit in.
Okay. For you, there was no difference between marijuana, drinking, and meth. Was that the first? I don't know the categorization. I assume meth is a hard drug. Was that the first hard drug you'd used?
It is, and I really had no knowledge of it. I had no idea what it was going to do to my life from that point on.
Mm-hmm. And Kim, what about you? What was your first exposure to drugs and meth?
Okay, my first exposure to drugs, of course, through high school. Some people had marijuana once in a while. I've tried marijuana once or twice during my high school years, but of course I didn't like it, didn't want to have anything to do with drugs. I did not have anything to do with drugs at all until I was 27 years old, and at that time I had been married to someone and lived with him and had the business for 6 years, and he killed himself over an argument with me. After that point, I started drinking and going to the bars, got involved with a group of people that were into drugs, and I knew that drugs would help you lose weight. So at one point, a friend offered me some meth, and I started doing it, and it started helping me lose weight, and it also helped me numb any kind of feelings I had towards the death of my husband. And in that numbness, I found safety, I guess. And after that, I just became addicted, and it just went all downhill since that point. And I've become such a bad addict, or so addicted to the drug, that it has led me here to the prison.
You're in a prison, which means you've been convicted of a felony.
Right.
What were you convicted of?
I was convicted of forgery.
And were you forging what?
I forged a large amount of checks on a business account.
Why?
For drugs and for more money.
How expensive is this stuff? When we say more, people think you have to get on addicted and you're trying to get money to pay for the habit. What's meth cost and how much do people use?
I believe that an addict such as myself would go through at least a teener a day.
A what?
A teener.
Okay.
That's about a gram and a half a day, I would say.
Okay, now I'm thinking a gram is... Katie, do you know what a gram is? How many ounces in a gram?
I believe it's 32 grams in an ounce. So
32 grams in an ounce. Okay, mm-hmm. So it's a small amount. And what's this teener?
About a gram and a half.
Okay, so that's not a lot of volume, right?
It's not.
So what does it cost?
That costs roughly $100 to $150.
My goodness gracious. And back to you, Kim. How much of that do you use in a day?
I would use all of it in a day. And then if you have friends, of course, they use more. So I would go through at least a teener a day for myself.
So what was your meth budget? I mean, you're a businesswoman. What was your meth budget?
At least $150 a day, at the least.
So how do you pay for that?
I was a working addict for a while, and I also forged the checks, but this last 3 years I've been working, and so I just skip bills, don't pay my bills to use the drug.
And it's a daily drug?
Yes.
Katie, what about you? You used it. What led you into addiction and your felony conviction?
I'm glad you asked that. Like I stated before, when I was 18, I started to use, and I've used periodically throughout my life. I would use steadily every day for 3 to 6 months at a time. During that time period, I would pretty much work myself or my addiction. Through my addiction, I would end up losing my job, my place to live, because I wasn't paying my bills. I wasn't going to work on time. I was just generally being irresponsible. So I wouldn't have money for the drug, and I would pack up everything and relocate to another town thinking, well, I'm going to start over, and I won't be around it anymore, so I won't use.
So you were inclined not to use. You wanted to get out of it in some way? Okay. But obviously it didn't work, so why not?
Exactly. Every time that I relapsed using it, I was more desperate for the drug. I went from what started out at about a $25 or $50 a day habit to $100, $200, $300 a day. And, of course, as a working mother, I couldn't afford that, so I ended up dealing the drugs. I would sell for my dealer.
Where'd you get the drugs to sell?
Usually, it would just come to me. Somebody off of the street who was a dealer would approach me and say, you know, do you want to buy some meth? Or usually it's offered in some kind of a slang name, like, do you know Crystal? You want some crank? There's all different kinds of terminology for it.
But there's a difference between wholesale and retail, meaning you buy it as the end. Somebody says you want some crystal, they may mean you want for your daily habit. But to get into selling, you got to buy a lot more. And I'm assuming you're not buying at a retail price because you can't make any profit. So how do you set up a deal where somebody's selling you at the wholesale price? How do you become a dealer? You said you were a dealer.
This is one of the ways where it gets really dangerous because, in general, the drug is fronted to you. You don't put any money up for it. It's given to you with the expectation that you will sell it and return with the money, and they will give you more drugs. And that's where a lot of people get in a lot of trouble because the drug is so addicting. Like for myself, I used portions of the drug that I was required to sell. And so then I ended up owing that person. So I would be obligated to sell more and more and more. And in turn, also, you're given a certain amount of methamphetamine. It's like your wage for their labor.
We are talking with Katie and Kim, who are inmates in the Montana Women's Prison in Billings. And they are both in prison because of methamphetamine addiction. Now, you talked, Katie, about going from being a user to a dealer. I'm told meth is very easy to manufacture. Did you get involved in manufacturing meth?
I did.
And how did that happen?
I dated a man who had the knowledge of the chemistry to actually make the methamphetamine. And I would provide precursors, they call them, which are the products that you buy at the local stores that they use to make the drug.
This cold medicine, there's some cold medicines that have some of this stuff in it. What, in a nutshell, can you explain simply what goes into meth?
Well, there are several different recipes. Generally, we used Sudafed pills, Xylene, different painting-based products, which were easy for me to obtain because I had a painting business.
And then you'd use some sort of process in it that you can do anywhere, I'm told, like garages and stuff, and make this product.
Mm-hmm. People make it right out of the trunk of their cars.
So nothing that you've described costs $150 for a 30th or 15th of an ounce, so there's a hell of a lot of profit in this. Is that mm-hmm. fair?
Yes, there is.
So if you were making meth and selling it, why didn't you get rich and retire?
Because I used all the profit. You can't hardly make enough to satisfy your habit. Mm-hmm. The further you get into it, the more you use.
Kim, let me ask you this. What does this stuff do for you? In other words, why would you keep using it? Addict, I mean, means you want it, but why do you want it?
I believe that I wanted it because it shut off every feeling that I have inside me. I'm able to not care anymore. I'm able to just go away and not deal with any of my problems. And I, because of Bill's death, I just started shutting everybody out and stuffing my feelings. And using methamphetamines helped me do that, and it became mm-hmm. a way of living for me. And I needed that because when I didn't have it and I had to feel, my life was miserable for me there too.
Looking back, I mean, at the time, there's a terrible tragedy, obviously. You didn't seek some kind of medical counseling, psychotherapy. That didn't occur to you, or did you have close friends you could talk to?
I received a large insurance policy, life insurance policy. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I had a lot of friends that all of a sudden came out of the woodwork, and they all wanted to take me out to the bar. And I did think about counseling, but I started drinking so much, and everybody would come daily to take me out drinking to make me feel better. And everybody thought that I should be fine with his death because I got all that money, that I just started drinking. And then, of course, I got introduced to the drug, and then I just forgot everything. I didn't care anymore.
Back to you, Katie. What led to your arrest and conviction?
I had been using the drug, and there were a lot of people involved in providing precursors to make the drug, to supply their own habit, selling the drug to people, and basically there was just traffic back and forth all the time. And there was an investigation that had started 6 months prior to my arrest, the investigation of myself and four other people that were involved in the manufacture and the operation of this laboratory where it was at, where the methamphetamine was actually being made.
Where was this?
This was in south of the little town of Darby, Montana.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. So investigation takes place. And you have informants involved? I mean, the police find out something from somebody, presumably.
The way I understand that it happened is there was a girl who was a user who had sold about a half a gram to another person in the local casino, and a concerned citizen had called it in. So this lady was picked up and arrested for the transaction of the sale, and the local police, I guess, put a little pressure on her for information on where mm-hmm. she'd got it from, and you know, she was just an addict. She was scared too, and she gave a whole bunch of names, and that was the turning point of the investigation. Mm. They started watching everybody until they finally got enough information.
You said a lot of people were involved in your small marketing process selling. Mm-hmm. What's a lot of people?
I would say that by the time it rippled out, there were probably 100 people that were being supplied from that particular operation.
And 100 people being supplied in what sort of geographical area? I mean, from Darby, if that's the center point, I mean, as far as Hamilton, are they, I mean, are you talking about as far as Missoula, or is it a small area? What's that look like?
I think that the drugs actually probably went all the way to Butte, to Missoula, mm-hmm. even down into Salmon, Idaho.
Any competition between, you know, and one thinks of, you know, the movies of the drug manufacturers and turf wars and people getting gunned down, all that sort of stuff. You don't hear a lot about it, at least I don't hear a lot about that problem in relation to meth. Is it just everybody live and let live, there's enough markets out there, or what happens?
That's been my experience, is that there are so many people all the time trying to find out where to get it. That if anybody has any idea where to get it, there's 10 people standing in line behind them.
Mm-hmm. So not a lot of conflict or turf wars on the part of the makers or even the dealers?
Not that I've experienced.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess one of the things is this stuff is apparently so easily usable. It's not like cocaine, I mean, easily manufacturable. It's not like cocaine where you have this elaborate sort of mafia, sort of hierarchical distribution system. Anybody can make it. It's, I guess you could call it an entrepreneurial drug. Did this have some health effects on you personally other than craving it? Did it have any negative impacts? I know a lot of people get hepatitis C from using intravenous injections and this sort of thing. You look healthy.
I'm relatively healthy. I didn't use intravenously. I was a smoker. It has bad health effects. I mean, I think most people who use it, it affects their all their organs, internal organs, lungs, teeth is a big thing.
Yeah, I'm told it decalcifies your teeth, which sounds like a bizarre process.
And a painful one.
Have you experienced that at all with it?
I've had a lot of dental work done on my teeth. I'm fortunate that I still have most of them.
So back to you, Kim. You were convicted. Did you plead guilty?
Yes, I pleaded guilty. I pleaded guilty to forgery, and I ended up with a 10-year sentence. It's 10-year with 5 suspended.
And when was this conviction?
In 1999.
Oh, so you're nearing the end of a sentence.
Correct, but I have a probation violation for relapsing.
Now, does that mean you got out?
Right.
Okay, and then you...
But at the first time, when I was first sentenced, I was in a county jail for a year, and then I went to pre-release. I then was released and had been working. 3 years into being released, I had had a son. After I had him, I had weight gain, so I started using again. So once I started using again, it took 2 years or a year and a half for me to get to the point where I was then given a probation violation for using meth and having a dirty UA by my probation officer.
UA urine analysis?
Mm-hmm.
Let me just ask you this. You're obviously an intelligent woman. You had been convicted of forgery.
Mm-hmm.
You had gone to jail.
Mm-hmm.
You start gaining weight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why didn't you say, wait a minute, I'm going to do something. I'm not going back on meth. What's wrong there?
Well, I guess it was that easy way out. I thought I could do it for the weekend, lose 10 pounds and stop. What I've realized is that I have no power over this drug. Once I use it, it's over for me. And that is what I've learned from this relapse, is that there is no way possible for me to ever think I have any control over using meth. Meth is so strongly addictive that if I touch it, I might as well figure that I will come back to prison, and I have not that choice at all anymore, and I won't use it ever again because now I know the way to stay away from it. I can't use it because I'm powerless.
You were clean from it for how long?
3 years.
3 years, so mm-hmm. you were able to break it. Was it mm-hmm. hard to break it?
No, not really. I mean, because I was locked up for the year and then mm-hmm. I was in pre-release and I was going to my recovery groups and mm-hmm. everything was really falling in place for me. I had a wonderful job again. The weight gain, and then also another problem was is that I was around some people in my work environment that were using drugs as well. Instead of maybe looking at the fact that I should walk away from that job and find a new one because of my addictive behavior, I stayed there and then I started using it.
So now, in summary, what's next for you?
What's next for me, as soon as I'm in this therapeutic community here, And what it is we all live together. There's 15 girls in the therapeutic community. We're housed
in this prison here?
Correct.
Okay.
It's a new program. I'm one of the first to start the program. We have rooms that we share here. We'll go through classes that will help us re-enter the community outside of prison and help us get a job, help us just, you know, relate in the community out there and work through our problems, get into a recovery group. Once I get out of here and go out there, I plan on going back to school, and I want to go to cosmetology school. Uh-huh. And I have that all set up for September to start that. And then, of course, I'm going to work my recovery group and stay in a recovery group because I believe that's the way that I can stay sober.
You're pretty confident?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I am. But I needed this time to really think through my actions and realize how powerless I am over this drug. This drug is so addictive that if you don't get help and stay in a recovery group once you become addictive like I, you won't be able to stay off of it.
Did you say earlier you had children?
Yes, I have a young son. He's 3 years old.
And what's happening to him during all this time, and how do you feel about that?
Well, he's well taken care of by my family. Mm-hmm. But I've realized that my choices affect more than just me, and they really affect a child. And with that, I know that it's just not all about me anymore, and the choices I make from this day forward are going to be about the whole picture, the big picture, and everyone included, and especially my son.
Katie, going back to you, you were arrested and convicted for manufacture?
I was.
Okay, what happened?
And the original charges were conspiracy to operate a clandestine lab, which is a secret laboratory, conspiracy to manufacture methamphetamine, and criminal endangerment, and possession of dangerous drugs. I was fortunate enough to take a plea agreement where I was actually convicted of conspiracy to manufacture and possession of dangerous drugs, which originally was a 6-year deferred sentence, which meant that if I had met all my probation obligations in 6 years, it could have been stricken from my record.
But what did you have to serve? In other words, 6-year deferred sentence, did you have to spend any time under that plea bargain?
No, I sat 30 days in jail, bonded out, went to court, and was just released on probation under those terms.
I think that will amaze a lot of people. In other words, mm-hmm. you're convicted of a serious drug mm-hmm. offense, manufacturing a dangerous drug. Mm-hmm. I just think one thing it's important for listeners to understand, and I'm going to guess this has something to do with it. The women's prison in Billings has about 220 inmates, 75% of whom, I'm told, approximately, are meth addicts. This whole thing is out of control, and I just think one of the problems they have is they haven't got room to put anybody anyplace. Well, that must have seemed to you like a slap on the wrist.
It did. And it didn't take very long for me to... I did quit using, but within a matter of a few months, I relapsed on meth again.
How did they find out? I mean, urine analysis or?
Well, I couldn't seem to get clean to do a urine analysis. And so when my probation officer ultimately came to my house to make me provide, I gave her a bunch of stories and she said, okay, be in my office in an hour. And I skipped the state.
Okay. So they found you.
Yep. They picked me up in Wyoming. I came back, was revocated. I came to the Montana Women's Prison, completed treatment. The boot camp program when it was up and running here, I graduated that in 4 months. I went back out. I was out for 4 months. I relapsed again, and now I'm back here. I've been locked up since December.
Despite the fact you're obviously an intelligent woman, someone might say, why are you a slow learner? What's going on?
It seems like recovery is the biggest key to figuring that out. Through treatment, I have decided, well, figured out why I am an addict.
Why are you an addict?
Because I haven't dealt with a lot of issues from my past. I had suppressed memories from my childhood, and I just was always the kind of person who wanted to run away from everything that ever happened, and I, like Kim, used the drugs.
You said you ran away from home, was that right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
So what are you going to do? In other words, when do you get out? If you behave in here, everything goes according, when do you leave?
It looks like I'll be leaving here in a month and a half. I should be going to another recovery treatment program in Butte. It's called Connections Corrections. It's a 60-day inpatient treatment. From there, I'll go to a pre-release center here in Billings. From there, I want to go back to school. It seems like the progression of meth, at some point you go so far down, you realize that there is no alternative, that you just absolutely cannot use. It is the end of your life. The drug is, you begin to hate it. And to search for anything and everything to get it out of your life and to stay away from it. And I know now that I have to better my life in the principles that I'm going to find rewarding. I want to go to school.
Why do you want to go to school?
One of the biggest desires I have is to become a CD counselor, chemical dependency counselor, because I have a lot of experience.
I guess you do.
With this, and its destructiveness. And I hate meth, and I don't want to see anybody else suffer the way I've suffered or the many, many women that I've seen become victims of meth.
Let me just ask you this. I mean, you say suffer. Suffer what? You had an expensive habit. I hear that. It cost you a lot of money. It led you to make violate federal law and get thrown in prison. But what's the suffering? I mean, this is a nice facility, someone might say. What's the suffering that's affected so many people that you talk about?
I think the suffering comes from the mistakes that we make in our lives by putting the drug first. We hurt our children. We hurt our families.
You have children too, you said,
I
right?
Do.
Two children?
I have two teenage daughters and a 3-year-old son. Mm-hmm. And their lives have been just devastated because of my drug use.
And what do you say to them? What do you say to your teenage daughters?
I've told them that I'm sorry and I'm sorry and I'm sorry over and over again. And the words really don't mean anything. And I know now that I have to set that example for them. Both my daughters are struggling with addictions themselves.
Meth? Alcohol?
The oldest one has used meth. She's been in treatment twice for it. The youngest one is 14, and I think if it was available to her, she'd be there in a heartbeat. And that's my worst fear. That was my big wake-up call, is to see my own children sick from it. Sick emotionally and sick physically from the effects of methamphetamine, and yet convinced in some sick way that they had to have more to feel better, because the drug makes you think that you're invincible. You can do so many things, and it's, you know, enables you to be productive, and it's a lie. It's like it tricks you.
Katie and Kim, I regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you very much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is a production of Artemis Common Ground. Sandra Dalpagetto, producer. We welcome your ideas for new programs at Box 748, Helena, Montana, 59624, or email Brian at artemisgroup.org. Home Ground is in part made possible by grants from the Montana Committee for the Humanities and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communications on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.